Here we go. This is a case and we're broadcasting, correct? Yes. Mics are live.
Brian, just so.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I'm with staff, and then we'll get started.
Am I coming through okay?
Commissioner, are you running it from your side, or do you want someone on this side to run it, and do you have opening comments?
I don't have any opening comments, and if someone could run it on that end, just so I can minimize the distractions as I'm traveling.
I'll volunteer then. I'm Randy Christman. I'm one of the commissioners of the Public Service Commission. I will start this work session on case number PU-19-190. And this is for renewal and revision for the Coyote Creek Mine. Joined here by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and calling in through audio is Commission Chairman Brian Crotius. We also have four people from staff, Dean Voigt, Bruce Beachy, Guy Welch, sorry, put that, always happens when I start introducing people fast, and Jack Hsu, and Steve Call. I already forgot you once this morning. So we had a formal, first there was an informal process, and the commission reached a decision based on the judge's recommendation after the informal. That was appealed to a formal hearing, and now there was some time for closing arguments and some late filings and such after that. We've had those things now for a few days, and this is our first work session on the topic, but it's a pretty tight time constraint because of the federal requirements of that and us reaching a decision in a very short time. So as I recall, there were kind of seven issues when this all started. One of them on a cultural resource issue, the Voigts did not proceed with. And so that got it down to six. A second issue was the Coyote Creek Mine lacks incentive to comply. And that was not pursued in the formal hearing, although I think there was mention that it may be brought up at a later date. But so it's not a part of our decision, I don't believe, at this time. And so that left five things. The sediment issue, Coyote Creek Mine's ability to reclaim, a road access issue to the south and west of the Voigt Ranch. When I said sediment, I mean in the creek. And then wind erosion and dust as a fourth concern. And then back to the alluvial valley floor is the fifth one. So I think maybe it would be most helpful, Jack, because I think the first two, they're not really a factor in our decision here, I don't believe. And if you agree with that, we can just focus on the other five, and maybe you just want to give an overview of those and what your thoughts are.
Sure, Commissioner. I think that's workable way of going through this, and I do want to make you aware, and it's my understanding that we received two additional filings. I saw it on my desk when I walked in this morning. I haven't had a chance to read them. I'm not sure what was contained in them. My email was down over the weekend, too, so I wasn't able to receive them either.
It's not really related to the five issues.
Sure. Okay. I imagine most of it's pretty unrelated to the actual hearing record in and of itself. Actually, I thought, Dean, maybe you might be...
The subject matter in that was air quality stuff, right?
I haven't even looked at it.
I just briefly scanned it. Sure. Wasn't it, Dean?
It's somewhat related.
Like jurisdictional issues. Who's got the right jurisdiction?
Sure.
Seemed like it.
I just read it 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know. I did too, Dean. I just want to make sure.
And in fairness for other people who listen to these broadcasts, a number of our staff people, as well as all commissioners, had another meeting on another subject in another location this morning. And so what got brought in to us this morning, it's not that we just chose to show up just in time for this work session, but we were elsewhere at another meeting.
And I guess
it's not been reviewed very thoroughly, this part.
Just to give another overview of kind of where we're at, we had the 30 days to put out an order. We received the filings. This kind of gave us about 10. I think we're on day 11 of reviewing this. And so I think what we're trying to get here as staff is some feedback from you so we know how to start drafting the order, which we think will reflect the commission's viewpoint, which then at that point in time you'll have an opportunity to review. And, of course, having probably some further discussion before we actually issue an order on this.
Jack, to that point, can you tell me what date the order is due, our decision is due? We're on day 11.
I apologize. I left my phone at home, too, so I'm just a mess today. But I had it in my calendar, but I don't have that in front of me.
What day did it start?
30 days from I think, January 10th was the closing argument, so 30 days would be
probably ninth
of February, I believe, is the
which is and weekends count for
yes.
the 30 days.
Yes, it,
okay. 4, 10, 7, 28. Yeah, the 9th is a Sunday.
Yeah.
So is it then the next Monday, or is it the previous Friday? When the date falls on a Sunday.
For filings, it generally goes to the following Monday, but I'm not sure how that actually works when it comes to our issuing orders specifically.
So maybe we should consider it being the 7th,
sure.
Friday, February 7th.
Sure. And I think that's a date that we probably can have it all done by.
Okay.
Regardless.
I just want to say, I guess we have to spend as much time as it takes, and I understand why we needed to, after the informal, we needed to wait for the judge's decision and until we got that, and we ended up within hours of a deadline.
Sure.
Whether it's the 7th or the 10th when the 9th falls on a holiday, I don't want the 7th either. I would like to see this some earlier than that so that we're not scrambling around here in the last hours again.
Absolutely.
I just like to know what the drop dead is so
right.
we orient ourselves to that end.
I don't want us to plan on doing it on the 7th or the 10th.
And I think from staff standpoint, we intend to have it done much sooner than that.
Okay.
So I guess, Dean, would you like to walk us through the issues specifically, or commissioners lead us as well?
That would be fine.
You just want to go through order by or issue by issue?
It was five,
And I get
maybe wrap it up with a special condition issue as well, or we can work that into.
Right, when we get to that issue.
All right, I'm back. Thank you. Okay.
Well, we'll just take them in the order. I think both recommended orders have different order for the issues. So we'll just take Coyote Creek. I guess that's what I have in front of me, and we'll go through it order or issue by issue according to the order that they have there. The first one being access. And Mercer County issued the road closure and approved the relocation plans. Those plans are in the permit now. And the Voits have asked that more detail be put in there. I guess I'm not sure what additional detail we can put in there. I don't know if staff's got any further thoughts, or if they're interpreting that differently than the way I am.
I think this road, even though an easement has not yet been secured for it, I think you know, it's planned to be put on the quarter line. That could be shown on the post-mine land use map, even if it's subject to change down the road. That would be one thing that could be done in the permit.
Can you restate that, Guy? What you're saying the recommendation is?
What I'm saying is one of the things that might be considered would be to show this road on the post-mine land use map in the permit.
Okay, and it currently is not?
It is currently not shown in the permit as a road.
How they've indicated it's going to happen with the county.
Right, but an easement from the state has still not been secured. So, you know, is it going to be there? It may not be there. Who knows? But the plan right now is to put it on the quarter line. And, you know, one of the things you could do to make it clear for somebody looking at the permit application is to show a road at this location on the post-mine land use map.
All right.
Would be a thought.
But it seems like that's somewhat misleading to me, since the fact is the easement hasn't been granted. And I don't think that necessarily signifies something so unusual, because we deal in siting cases all the time where the state land, you know, the easements are coming, but it's sort of a last minute thing. But at the end of the day, this is a decision of the county commission, right? Where that road's going to be located. The easement needs to be acquired.
I think the agreement lays out that they will secure an easement.
Yeah.
But
if they chose to alter that between the end and now, that would be a decision that the commission, the county commission, and the state land board would.
Right, right. My only comment that is, if a road is going to be put someplace, then put it someplace on the post-mine land use map. To not put it there leaves you wondering whether a road is planned or not. And I guess right now everything indicates that a road will be put back. I'm not so sure.
Are there other things on that post-mine land use plan that are forward-thinking, that's subject to change?
About everything.
So is it typical to put the roads on that?
Yes.
All right. And it can be changed, so it's if conditions change or they don't get the easement or whatever, then that post-mine plan, land use plan, would be altered?
Correct.
Okay. Do you object to that,
Randy? I mean, that's just a thought. I guess I'm being asked. I mean, that would be one thing. I think, you know, when you look at the permit, you go to a section where you really wouldn't expect to find this. It isn't as clear as it could be. This would just present the information in a more clear manner.
Sure.
I think some of the items that Voits are asking for in their proposed order with regard to this road are already in the permit. I think a lot of what they're asking for is already in the permit.
Yes.
And we can kind of flesh that out more detail here, but You know, they say this description must comply with NDAC 6905.2-09-07 and must include, at a minimum, a discussion of whether Coyote Creek expects to reconstruct this road, when Coyote Creek expects to reconstruct this road, and the time frame for these plans. And I think a lot of that's in there already. So,
I guess, and it, I don't know, maybe it seems... Maybe I'm being overly cautious, but we discussed at great length during the hearing the fact that the plan is to reestablish the road, not close it off permanently, and all the issues involved that, you know, the county makes that decision and still awaiting final easement from the state. But I also thought 5 years ago that it was pretty well clarified that these road issues are kind of a county decision. And it seems like in some instances, the mine is just under a siege here of looking for something. And so I wonder if we put it in that the road is going on a specific place and it's shown on the map, then... Do they get attacked for claiming that, that the road is going to be there when there's not even an easement yet? That I guess is my worry, and it wasn't discussed in the hearing, so we didn't get to hear their thoughts on it. At first glance, it seems like a fine thing. We put it in there, and yeah, it might change. But I'm just wondering then, is that another thing to attack them on that? They're agreeing to a permit plan and don't have the easement.
And not sure what thoughts would be of just identifying on the post-mine land use map as tentative relocated county road or
pending
something to that
effect. Easement, you know, I mean,
yeah, pending easement or pending something easement to that effect. And that could be done in the next revision or I don't see, you know, that it would necessarily affect the renewal or this revision 9.
I mean, if there's other things in that plan, like you stated, just about everything is visionary that are subject to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably other things that they haven't acquired yet or, you know, obtained.
Right.
That they are saying this is what we envision it to be. Mm-hmm. I was confused. So I think that's makes sense, barring... you know, additional concerns identified. But aside from that suggestion, Guy, I was confused just in general about this agreement that they've reached, the two parties have reached, and then the surfacing of this issue and this complaint. So why? Why would the Voights make an agreement with the company on all these issues and then come and complain about those issues again separately?
Yeah. I can't speak to the Voights and why they might do some things, but when the agreement with the county was obtained between Coyote Creek and the county, the reality is we were left somewhat in the dark. And I mean the Reclamation Division.
And maybe you're getting to it, but I'm talking about the agreement between the Voights and Coyote Creek on access. They had a separate agreement that they reached. I can't point, right? I mean, we got a copy of it. Yeah.
The agreement that was provided at the hearing that, yeah, I think that was probably the first time we had seen that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm clearly understanding which agreement we're talking about.
Well, let's see here.
Something other
Memorandum
than,
of Access, yeah, CCMC yeah. Exhibit 5.
Yeah, no, this is different
Attached
than the
map
lease.
Map entitled Void Access Map, which is incorporated herein, references. I mean, so this was signed by Casey Voight, Derek Broughton, and Coyote Creek. Oh, not Derek Broughton. Casey Voight and Brendan Brinkman.
So, Commissioner, is that specific to access throughout the property, yeah. Or is it access about a road specific?
It's access throughout the property.
That's none of our...
That's not the issue here.
Well, that's just outside of our jurisdiction. That's a lease agreement issue between the Voits and Cow Creek Mine.
So how does it relate to the issue in this complaint, I guess?
The road? To me, the access issue is strictly this road and the interim roads until one is finally put in place in the year 2024.
Well, so this speaks to the interim roads, I think, to some extent.
I thought that was about, like, just accessing things in general, not necessarily on the specific road.
So that there's a lot of cattle access issues here, gates. All right, so what you're saying is this doesn't, the road issue that's the subject of this complaint, this agreement really doesn't address that.
There's a separate agreement with the county that provides for, I think the 4 or 5 relocation of the county road throughout the, while mining is taking place, and then the final tentative final location. Yep. And I think we feel that provides the access. It satisfies the requirement that they provide access
All right. Yeah, and they. I mean, yes. I agree. I think the plans that are outlined with the county and the maps satisfy it. Maybe it's just not in the permit or spelled out specifically enough in the permit.
So I think we can explore the possibility of putting that on the maps as a potential road, but I think we got to... I'm not quite ready to reach a conclusion on that, whether that's going to cause some other kind of problem.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for, early stages of permitting to show tentative plans. That's not uncommon at all. And they do, as time goes on, they do develop those. But I think this is, I think the plan that the county has arrived at and just, it needs the lease yet and... Or the easement, and it's what we have to operate with, and it meets our requirements.
Yeah. Does Brian have any questions?
But I don't know necessarily, that. I guess we would write the order as such that those requirements have been addressed and. And our proposed order.
Okay.
Anything else on access?
Brian, any questions from your end?
No.
Okay, let's move on to the next one.
Okay, the next one on the list then is Alluvial Valley Floors. Recommended order from Coyote Creek was that this has been addressed and nothing further is needed. The Voits here, I think they're proposing additional welds.
I believe they requested a new AVF determination and also installation of monitoring wells within the fields to ensure alfalfa yields. as well as establishing a baseline of hydrology so that if they're impacted that it can be reestablished.
In the essence of saving extra time to discuss the other three, I heard nothing in that hearing that in any way changes my opinion about the determination that we reached on this last time around and that the Supreme Court upheld.
I guess that's, I think, basically our conclusion, too, that that there was nothing new presented there. The depths to groundwater that, based on the additional drilling that they had done, were consistent with what was previously identified. The evidence that they provided of some former past irrigation, possible past irrigation with the pipes and stuff, I guess would make me wonder, well, why was it discontinued? I mean, it was obviously tried, and if it was feasible, why wasn't it continued? Bruce, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't think so. Just to back that up a little bit, I think if an operator went through the time and expense of putting in an irrigation system, if it was successful, one would think it would continue to be used. I have a photographic presentation about some air photos that we had taken I think it was 2013 and 2017. 2017 was a drought year, and air photos clearly showed that those lowland alfalfa fields were stressed. Had those fields been sub-irrigated, they would look as lush from one year to the next, whether or not it is a drought. The alfalfa irrigators that I've talked to pretty much all say they expect no less than 4 cuttings of alfalfa a year. If these fields were truly sub-irrigated, 2017, those fields would not look as bleak as what they did. It's the whole sub-irrigation thing is just it's just not working, not there.
If you have sub-irrigation, do you typically have the other irrigation on top of that?
No, it would be unnecessary.
Well, then why? I don't understand that. Why is that presence of irrigation equipment that's been abandoned evidence that there's an alluvial valley floor? To me, that would be contrary because you wouldn't need to irrigate.
Exactly.
Just the fact that an alluvial valley floor.
Just the fact that they attempted flood irrigation at some point in time is just another indicator that sub-irrigation is not ongoing.
Okay. I also was not clear what the flood photos were. What was that attempting to show? The above ground flooding photos.
Well,
relates to an alluvial valley floor.
In some certain AVF in a lot of the states, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, ABFs, a lot of the ABFs are determined because of flood irrigation. And in those instances, it's not a normal spring overbank flood like we're looking at here. What it is, it's very controlled, timely floods from usually a dam, a small dam, located above a valley floor. And these valley floors, the operators have systems of irrigation canals and gates and that kind of stuff, and they know exactly when the water is going to be released, and that's the flood irrigation that AVF talks about. That's flood irrigation. This instance where we see the photos of the floods, like in 2009 along Kyle Creek, our springtime floods here in North Dakota. Generally happening when the ground is frozen. So really those types of flood irrigation are doing minimal or nothing to help either topsoil or subsoil moisture. So that's occasional spring flood is not a consideration for AVF.
And they're not, those floods are not being fed by an AVF. They're being fed by snowmelt, right? I mean, the flood you're talking about with the AVF is
usually flood. Spring runoff, yeah.
Snowmelt runoff. Spring runoff, yeah.
Yes.
All right.
In the one recommended order there was that we complete a new alluvial valley floor determination of the two alfalfa fields and submit the alluvial valley floor determination for these fields by September 30th, 20, or that the Coyote Creek submit, or we complete the study by September 30th, 2020. I think it's the staff's opinion that it's not necessary. Termination has been made. I know they make the point that rules speak of alluvial valley floor determinations for new permits and significant revisions. Revision 9 was a significant revision, but it did not add new acreage. The determination was already made, mm-hmm. and I guess we're standing by that determination. You know, we can have a significant sure. revision where we add acreage, and then obviously we would have to do the, you know, study the, you know, additional area and to make sure that there's not an alluvial valley floor. And I think we're quite comfortable in recommending that the a new AVF is not study determination is not needed.
I agree.
Yeah. There's
I do too.
Been two already.
Right.
One by DWC and one by Coyote Creek.
Yep. I agree.
Didn't hear anything from Brian yet. Commissioner Karasius, do you have any comments on the AVF issue to guide staff?
My only comment was similar to the comment Commissioner Crispin made, in that there wasn't anything presented that I found to be grounds to question or dispute the previous decision made by the commission on the AVF determination. There just wasn't anything, and you know, probably some missing questions at the time in terms of 2017, I think that was the drought year, correct? Limited, very little hay production, and I think it was even referenced that one field had one cutting, one field had two. But I would also suspect that the field that had two cuttings was also the first one cut that year. And you know, people were scrambling. So that was a widespread challenge. And, you know, along the, as far as the irrigation equipment, those comments that have been made, that was my thought process as well. So nothing in terms of direction. I think the matter is... been decided correctly in the past, and we should sustain that.
Okay, next one.
Well, the next topic issue is sediment, and Coyote Creek. Basically, that they're alleging that the sediment is from upstream source. The Voigt recommended order, proposed order, Coyote Creek shall submit a revision application by April 1st to add plans to inspect the channel of Coyote Creek on a monthly basis to evaluate sediment loads and the source of sediment loads. The inspection shall take place during the months when the stream is flowing. If sedimentation is located in the creek, notice shall be provided to the commission. I think as we brought out in both the informal conference and the formal hearing that We are inspecting that on a regular basis. It's an area that inspectors, when they go out to the field, you go by this site on every inspection, and for the most part, it is being inspected on a regular basis. And we are of the opinion it is not from the pond discharge, that if you were discharging water that was had that much sediment in it, it would be obvious. What's not clear is if the discharge itself may have been causing some erosion in the channel. Coyote Creek took some proactive steps there by putting the concrete mat down and erosion control fabric underneath, also the riprap, and so they've taken measures, and we feel that those are effective. And I guess the rest of it I'll defer to staff on.
I'd just like to make the comment that I guess that from the regulator standpoint, that's how we proceed. If the commission feels that maybe this additional provision requirement is in there is maybe beneficial or maybe warranted in this case, that certainly there is how we operate. The other one would be on the mine and how they have to operate. So I do want to differentiate between the two, I guess.
I'm not following you, Jack.
Okay, so what the director just walked through was how we operate on our side for regulation.
Right.
Now, what we're talking about here is the permit, and what they're requesting is this additional requirement for the mine to do things.
Right.
So even though it may be viewed somewhat redundant from staff standpoint, it may not be reviewed as redundant from an outside party standpoint, where as an additional requirement for the actual applicant to do something.
Sure. Well, I get concerned when we're prescribing specific steps for the ends that are required in the permit. I mean, I think that that's not how the process is envisioned or carried out, that we tell them exactly how to get to where they need to be from a regulatory standpoint.
Yeah.
And so I think it's more appropriate to leave that up to the company, and we look at the results.
Right. That's generally how we operate it. We try not to get too prescriptive on a lot of things. Here's the end result we want to see and how you get there.
Yeah, because things change in the field a lot. We could be tying their hands to a process that's outdated, maybe not on this, but on other things. It's just generally better, I think, to let the companies get there, and then they can adapt and be more efficient than we can be by, we're not there every day doing this. So, go ahead. Well, I wanted to have staff, and they can come back to this, but walk through again the process for approving discharges. Like, they have to have the water tested for sedimentation. I wanted to just go through that just briefly, like what they have to do before they can even do a discharge and where the results of that test go.
Want me to do it? Prior to when the pond reaches a level where they have to discharge it, they have to maintain an adequate capacity in the pond to contain a 10-year, 24-hour event. So then they look at the quality of that water, whether it's ready to discharge. Generally, they sample it, but visually they can tell, but their permit requires that they actually have some And this is the permit with the DEQ, the discharge permit, requires that they have actual numbers to associate with the discharge. So they have certain sampling requirements, at the time they start discharging. Then every so many days, I believe, they have to take a discharge And they visually monitor it. I mean, visually we'll do it, but it's backed up with the actual analysis that they take, the lab sample. And problem with the lab sample is they take it, there's a time lag. You know, they submit it there, it may be a day or two before they get results, but visually they know that they're good.
Yeah.
So is that kind of answer your question?
It does, yeah. My point is that there's documentation prior to discharging of the sediment levels in the water associated with each discharge.
So right.
That would provide further evidence if there's, you know, whether this cause of the sediment that is visible in those photos is coming from the discharge or not.
And it's called a pre-discharge sample, and they sample for total suspended solids. That would mean the cloudiness or the sediment that's suspended in the water, pH, iron, and look for sheen of oil and gas. So really, TSS, pH, and iron are the three main parameters that get analyzed.
Okay.
The kind of exception to that, and I don't know what it takes to be above that 10-year, 24-hour period, but there could be an extraordinary rain event where then it's just recognized that pond could overflow water that is not clear.
Right. And that
I don't know that there's any evidence of that happening in this case, but, I mean, that could potentially be a cause of some sediment in a creek at some point. But there's also another non-mine related potential source of sediment in this creek too that was discussed in the hearing. What I got out of this was one of the areas where it made me really proud of our team and the interactions. And I don't recall exactly what was mine initiated and what was recommendations from our team, but some things have been done in the past 5 years that were above necessarily the requirements to put the better type of erosion control matting as opposed to rocks and things like that. And I think what we had in the order is what should stay in the order. And I did not get persuaded in that hearing that anything further is necessary.
And as brought out in the hearing, is the pond has been discharged 11 times since it's been constructed, and each time it met the discharge standards. So
it seems like that could be a finding of fact for the order.
Did you have any other questions on anything, Brian, on sediment?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Next is reclamation and Coyote Creek. Nothing there. That no additional permit requirements were. Are required. Second to find Coyote Creek or the Voits. Proposed order for Voits. Coyote Creek shall submit a revision application by April 1st that modifies the mine plan to contain clear language indicating that Coyote Creek will mow all weeds before they go to seed on all land that has been grade approved. Secondly, submit a revision application by April 1st that modifies the mine plan to indicate that Coyote Creek will make reasonable efforts to obtain only straw mulch and seed that are certified weed-free. And a special condition is hereby added to 1302, allowing the Voits to accompany mine inspectors on any inspection subject to the discretion of PSC's Reclamation Division.
Well, that last one it seems through the process of the hearing, it became pretty evident to me that they can already do this.
Correct. It was brought out that is included in their permit or in their lease, excuse me, with the Voits that they do have access to their land for the purposes of inspection. And, certainly we will try to accommodate best we can, the Voits request. One thing I guess I wish I had said in the hearing was that, it was asked of us if we would, allow the Voits to participate in the inspection if they had requested, and I said yes, but I think my answer would still be yes, but I would prefer first that they request from Coyote Creek, that and if for some reason that was denied, then they request from us. Mm-hmm. So,
if I could say something, I think it's important that we keep our inspection separate from an inspection from an individual who has a concern with a mine. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this a few days ago in house, but we want to keep those two inspections separate.
If the Voits are requesting an inspection to accompany us on an inspection, we are likely going to inform the mine. But we also have a requirement that our inspections be unannounced, random. And there's exceptions to that where we need to meet a certain person or something like that, and we will, give them some advance notice. But for the most part, our inspections are supposed to be unannounced and random. So, to Guy's point is that we would treat that differently than one of our random unannounced inspections.
Why is that?
Primarily because we'll be giving them advance notice if the Voits are to accompany us on the inspection, I guess we would want them to have the appropriate people there as well. Whereas if we show up in an unannounced inspection, that person may not be available. Mm-hmm. We're accommodating the Voits' request for an inspection to look at what they want to inspect. That may not be what we need to inspect to fulfill our requirements. Yeah. It may or may not be, but...
Are members of the public allowed to come on an inspection with you guys, an unannounced inspection? I mean, how does that work?
I think SMACRA allows that.
SMACRA does allow for, citizen participation. They can request an inspection. There is a requirement that they can request an inspection. And there's provision in there that we can allow them to participate in the inspection, or they can be anonymous requests. And if we decide not to inspect based on there, we have to provide, the reasoning for that. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it could be completely altering of how our inspections work. If these are going to become big public events, then I suppose the mine is going to want their legal counsel probably coming with to make sure how everything is run because... how these things evolve. Now, I don't know with the drone nowadays how many times our inspectors still go on ATVs and such, but how many people can you accommodate to go back in the rough terrain and look at something? And on the complete inspections, which I suppose this would apply to too, so how much time does it add when our inspector goes in and reads a bunch of documenting language that are in files, and then you have to turn it over because this person wants to read it and the next one wants to read it, and you could probably sit there all day on just looking at a couple documents till a whole crew of people all get to read it. It just seems like I understand the point of some distinction between our normal inspections and the ones that are to accommodate the neighbors or the public in general.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm just thinking, you know, as a landowner, I'm guessing what this comes from is they don't like the prior, you know, like tipping off. If you're a landowner and you think a company's doing things wrong, then they can clean it up before if they get notice that you're coming out there. So, I mean, looking at it from their perspective, I'm sure that's why they prefer to come along on an unannounced inspection. So the justification for not allowing that, I just need to understand what that is. I can, you know, I think you've presented some solid data, especially if it was over and over and over and over and over again, you know, consistently. But that we need to be clear about what that justification is.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's common at all the mines for a landowner to work directly with the mining company. We have nothing to do with it
Right. Regarding
their lands and reclamation or what may or may not be happening, timelines. That's the better way to work it.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Yeah.
I think, Commissioner, one thing I was rolling around when we were discussing this issue is, one is our obligation in order to do our enforcement and do our inspections. The other one, as already has been stated, the other one, of course, is providing access to the landowner to also view the areas of reclamation. When you look in the statutes and the rules, it provides, we may not grant that. Now, we are always looking to accommodate the landowner, and we couldn't see a reason from our discussion why we wouldn't provide that access, but they are two separate mechanisms. I mean, one is to fulfill our duty, one is to provide landowner access, as well as their opportunity to review and show us various concerns that they have as well. And so when I generally look at how we operate our programs, it's always good to differentiate what we're doing this inspection for, that inspection for, or each separate, if only for the reasons of specifying under a law what we're doing for our different inspections or enforcement actions.
So for those two different inspections, is there then different protocol for informing the mines?
Yes.
Okay.
One is absolutely, we don't inform them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm fine with that. Does this order need to even address
this? It's in the law that there are avenues for them to accompany inspections or to work out their own inspections with the mine. So does our renewal and revision need to even address it? We're going to follow the law.
Right, it may be worth noting in there, I guess, the general provisions of laws and rules that we would provide access under to a landowner. There was testimony to that.
The other two items deal with mowing the weeds before they go to seed and then using, to the extent possible, straw mulch and seed that is certified weed-free. I guess those are kind of best management practices that are probably in there already. Again, it goes to your point, how prescriptive. Mm-hmm.
Well, the certified mulch isn't a...
The certified mulch would be a tough one. I mean, I think that came out in the hearing that we don't even know if there is such a thing. I mean, as Guy pointed out, it's more like for almost more like feed and hay for horses and straw, bedding straw, those types of things. It's not...
Right. Weed-free doesn't mean weed-free. It still has Russian thistle, which is the primary weed of concern. It'd be certified weed free, but it still has, other than state listed noxious weeds and a few others, it's going to have some of the weeds that are commonly found. So
I think it'd be almost an exercise in futility.
I agree. Too prescriptive.
I would point out, just for a point of clarification on what they requested, they requested that Cuyahoga Creek make reasonable efforts to obtain that certified weed-free. And if they are unable to do so, then form the commission, and then they may obtain other straw. So there's a little distinction there, but I just wanted to be clear that that was the point they requested.
I'm fine with just moving on as we
have. Well, so it says here, it's reasonable to require CCMC to take measures to minimize the growth of weeds during reclamation to facilitate prompt and efficient reclamation, including reclamation of surrounding lands that may be impacted by spread of weeds that go to seed. And I would say we agree, and that's required by the permit already.
Right.
Although I want to be careful here that with regard to the seeding, wasn't one of the things that was discussed in the hearing, like where the weeds were found to be growing, that they were mowed, not just going to seed and blowing all over the place, but that it was a small tract, and the point was to get the adjoining tract together and get it all seeded at once in order to accommodate a larger tract than that can be fenced and use grazing and all the various options in order to get a good long-term standing of grass. So, yeah, I get that on the surface it seems like, oh, yeah, it should be seeded right away the first year it's ready, but if it's just a handful of acres and the adjoining tract will be ready the next year, maybe it doesn't make sense to seed it the first year. So that's where I think it's another example of what you said earlier, Julie, where you can get so prescriptive and on the surface that sounds reasonable, but in actuality it probably actually makes you less effective at doing a good job of reclamation.
There's always a danger in being too prescriptive that they do it the way you say you have to do it, and then when it doesn't work they say, yeah, but we did it exactly the way you told us to do it, and sorry.
We knew it was the wrong way, but we had to.
So it's the results, you know, the end result is what we're interested in, and how you get there, you know, with a few sideboards.
And in some respects, this piece I felt was, you know, we take a longer-term view, and any snapshot in time might, before the, you know, longer vision of complete reclamation, may not look beautiful, but it's to get to the big picture. So that's where I felt like this was a snapshot in time that was, you know, really early in the reclamation process. And and I don't think anybody suggests that this is how it's going to be in the end.
Yep. Okay.
Just to be clear, regulation says that they must seed to the approved seed mixture within the first opportunity after soil respread. Within this permit, we have already granted a variance to that requirement for the reasons they state, to get larger tracts. But in the meantime, there's language in the permit that talks about cover crops and doing other things that are going to suppress weeds, and then proper management for not only weed control but erosion. So,
so something you're closely watching and
yep,
and working with the company on.
I just wouldn't mind having a summary of what we decided. I know they requested a couple of revisions on the certified weed-free mulch seed, and it seems like the commission at this point is declining to have a revision for that. I know you discussed the mowing all the weeds before they go to seed, and I think revision was not suggested for that as well by the commission. And on the...
Well, I think that's kind of... We don't know... That's just generally the case, isn't it?
It's best practice.
Practices, right.
Elsewhere in our whole permitting process, that where there are weeds, that they're controlled.
Right. And I guess to clarify, I wasn't saying it's not the best practice, saying adding a revision into the application is what I was referring to, just for the purposes of writing up the order.
Right.
And the third one then was the access, and it sounds like that is kind of what's already prescribed in laws and rules, at least for our providing access, because I know they did say it was to the discretion of the PSC's reclamation director, yeah. And I believe that's kind of how it operates currently, yeah. In addition to the fact that they have access to the lease already as well.
Right.
Okay. The last topic is dust. And Coyote Creek, their recommended order was basically that, you know, the regulatory authority belongs with the DEQ. And also requested that special condition number one that was associated with revision 9 be rescinded. And the Voits catch up here. Request a revision application by April 20th to add plans for a minimum of 3 continuous dust monitors calibrated to inform Coyote Creek of erosion and attendant dust issues arise from the mine surfaces, including haul roads. All dust monitors shall be located on the east side of the mine at a distance of 50 to 150 feet east of the mine's primary north-south haul road. And at least one monitor situated near the mine's north pits, one monitor situated near the mine's south pits, and one monitor situated in between the Voits farmstead and Coyote Creek's haul road closest to the Voits farmstead.
So our dust-related... jurisdiction is tied to erosion, correct? Mm-hmm. So the haul road dust is not erosion. That feels like that would be more to me, as I was watching and listening to this during the hearing, that felt to me more of a jurisdiction of the health department.
Maybe for point of clarification, Guy, would you be able to describe, or Dean, whoever deals with the air permit, what the air permit addresses regarding road dust and wind erosion?
The air permit?
Yes.
Okay.
The air permit, I'm just going to read what it says right in the permit. Control fugitive dust particles from land clearing, topsoil and overburden removal, and other material handling operations using strategies such as watering, revegetation, delay of topsoil disturbance and unnecessary, until necessary, surface compaction, and sealing unless natural moisture is sufficient to control emissions. Use fugitive dust preventative measures such as watering, covering, shielding, or enclosing stockpiles, both active and inactive, as necessary to control emissions unless natural moisture is sufficient. Fugitive dust prevention measures such as frequent watering. I guess The permit from DEQ, you know, has levels of fugitive dust in the air measured at the permit boundary, right? And quite frankly, I'm not even sure what that means exactly. In this case, are you saying that the dust beyond the Voigt farmstead is where DEQ would look at the air and say, it's okay? You know, there's some gray there in my mind. I just know that we don't regulate air quality, but the effects of that dust or erosion on undisturbed lands or reclaimed lands, I think, does become our jurisdiction. They regulate air, we regulate land. It's a tough one for me to get my head around, to be honest. But I just can say that I don't think we can categorically say we have no responsibilities towards dust. There's several portions of regulation, including our haul roads, that talk about our requirement for attendant air pollution.
Sure.
So, okay. do we completely say it's outside of our jurisdiction and we can do nothing? And I don't think that's fair. That's just me.
Guy, would you say that we do address these issues by having the DEQ permit in the first place, though? I mean, we're supposed to work cooperatively with these other agencies. You've had discussions. I mean, they are the enforcement of air quality in and of itself.
Right.
That was the discussion that I know that we've all had, and that's how we generally operated. And by having this requirement in there, do you believe that that should be addressing this attendant air quality and wind erosion issues that was discussed at the hearing?
Part of it. I mean, it's air pollution. But you're going to have situations where you've got topsoil blowing.
Sure.
That's our baby. That's the loss of a resource.
Right. And is that already addressed in the application as well, permit?
It's in the permit, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the permit is adequate to address all these. The point is that there could be events at any given day that could, the measures may be insufficient.
But for these kinds of air monitors outside of the mined area, shouldn't that be something that the DEQ decides whether or not those monitors are needed or not? It seems if we're going to do this, then, you know, what about all the other, and I don't recall all the various things that more so our power plants require air monitoring around them. You know, it's coal related. Do we then start stepping out and saying, well, you know, you're only requiring four, you should require six or so? This just seems to me like an area where we are stepping into to their wheelhouse by requiring these monitors.
I would agree with that is a DEQ responsibility or determination. We don't have the technical expertise on air monitors. It seems to us that it would be something that would be more DEQ related. If they thought it was appropriate, that they would put it in their permit.
I think that's where their request ought to go, is to DEQ for those monitors.
Yeah, I support that. I wondered what the monitors would accomplish. Anyway, I mean, even if DEQ does require them, you gotta wonder if that's gonna improve. It seems like they know what needs to be done and they're working to do it. You know, reducing the amount of work in those in the spoil pile areas, or the hauling of the soil when it's really windy, and certain times of the year, it seems like it's very focused on, you know, special times of the year where the watering methodology can't be used because it's too cold and it's, you know, really windy. So
Commissioner Karasius, do you have anything to add to that as well?
No, nothing to add. I like what I'm hearing. I think we're headed in the correct direction.
Before we leave this topic, I think this is probably a good point to discuss the special condition as well. So I know Commissioner Christman, I believe you have some thoughts on that. If you'd like, I can read it back.
Yeah, would you?
Sure. That's right. Cuyahoga Creek Mining Company shall maintain detailed records of all measures and methods used on a daily basis to effectively control wind erosion and attendant air pollution. These records shall be maintained at the office and be available during mine inspections.
So our discussion earlier was essentially that I don't regret or feel like we made some big error when we did the previous approval. The timing of that was such that we couldn't really take an action until we got the judge's decision, and not to pass it off on the judge, his time was constrained too, and we got it, and we were literally hours from a deadline. And it seemed kind of okay, and so I was supportive of it. But in retrospect, now that we've had more time to discuss it and had the full hearing and think about it more, I frankly think our program in general is pretty good, and I would be okay with eliminating this special provision too.
I think the way the special condition is written is fine because it isn't very prescriptive, and it's just, you know, the company outlined a lot of the measures. They first acknowledged that this dust was not something that they even feel is satisfactory. They don't anticipate operating in a way that creates this much dust in the future, and that they want to control it. So they are taking and outline measures that they take and changes in their operation that they're taking. So this is just saying, okay, just keep track of those. And so, you know, there's a record of what you're doing to control the dust that will be, I think, valuable in the future. So I think it's appropriate. And it's not prescriptive, so we aren't saying you have to do X, Y, and Z on such and such a dates, or, you know, so many times a day or anything like that. Just whatever you're doing, keep track of it so that a record exists. I think that's appropriate.
Oh, well, here's my concern with that. Clearly, you know, when we had the hearing on the various topics, they do keep a lot of records. And, you know, we talk about things and they show what happen on certain dates and how much rain we got and what they were doing and when they ceased mining at certain days, or not ceased mining, but like topsoil removal or something because it was too windy. So they do keep a lot of records, and it's in their own best interest, and I'm sure they do that whether we tell them to or not. So we put in the special condition and it says maintain detailed records. I don't know what detailed records means. And so then does the critic come in the public inspection and think of some other thing that they can imagine at some other time, and there's no record of that particular thing. And to them, that's what's important. And they say, this isn't detailed. You don't even have this included in here. I don't know how you meet a standard of detailed records.
What if we just take out the detailed that alleviate your concern?
I'm fine with that.
Just maintain records.
Yeah.
The purpose.
I'm a little struggling with whether the whole condition is needed. It would certainly be an improvement to eliminate that, and then it would, you know, kind of put the responsibility on them to decide what kind of records they think they need to show that they're operating within the normal requirements of a mine permit.
The purpose when we put the condition on there was when we do get the call that there's a complaint on dust, that I mean, we're going to go out there after the fact on a lot of you know, mm-hmm. most enforcement actions were going out after the fact, or complaints, I should say, not necessarily enforcement actions, but we're going out after the fact. And it's something that we could look at the records and say, they did what they said they were going to do. It's not that nothing was being done, or maybe it is a case where nothing was done. There's no record of it. It's just to document what they are doing, what they say they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. If there is a continuing problem, would you say that that would also provide the opportunity to evaluate what's being done and determine what isn't working?
What is effective? Yeah, correct.
Not just for us, but for the DEQ without actually altering a permit.
I was making a note of something else. Would you repeat that?
Sure. It would provide an opportunity for people to review, whether it's us or the DEQ, what is being done, and if it is not being effective, what is not being effective in that case as well.
Well, I think at the very least, elimination of the directly term, because I just don't know how we would define that. I'm going to think about it one way or the other, whether I can support the condition at all. Sure.
I have a couple questions I can ask. Can you hear me?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, you're coming through good.
Okay. Aren't these records something that the mine is required to keep regardless of whether or not we indicate we want that to occur or not?
My understanding is these are all practices that they're doing. However, they were not keeping a specific record just for this until after the informal conference occurred. And that special condition was put on. So they weren't specifically doing something like this type of record. However, they were doing all of these items in practice.
All right.
I feel that's not
so we don't know that this is or isn't a formal requirement that the mine has to satisfy?
Hey. I don't believe the DEQ requires it in their permit. Not that I'm aware of.
And it's not provided for in our current permit,
right?
As it is, well, now it is, but it had not been in the original permit.
Okay. Yeah. For me on this particular issue, it goes back to what is this tied to that's actually tangible? It's been stated we don't have experts on staff. I think it sounds good, but at the same time, depending on your position, you know, for some it doesn't sound good. But what does it tie back to in terms of how do we quantify, how do we measure, what's the tangible outcome or result of going down this path to begin with? Because, you know, we're concerned about erosion. Guide made an excellent point in terms of fugitive dust as it relates to, you know, the permit, and so I understand that. I'm really having, I just find it challenging to take it to that extent with listing it as a provision in the permit. So that's where I'm at right now.
If I could just say, you know, to take us back, when we first seen the pictures and the videos in June, when Casey Voigt came in and showed us, we were all kind of like, wow, you know. After the informal conference and thinking about it, it's like, is it good enough to say, sorry, ain't our baby? So, you know, it was something. In part of this, whether it's wind erosion or weeds or anything, is a mining company making a good effort? And as inspectors, if if a company has done everything you'd reasonably expect them to do, and it rains 4 inches in 3 hours, and he erodes, you know what? We're probably not going to write a violation, right? So to me, part of this was saying, I don't know that I have a real good handle on what the company's doing to control erosion. And this was just for us to get a better handle on it because, you know, we're only there a few days, a few days a month. And so this was just us to get a better handle on what the mining company is doing to give themselves credit for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, you know, is this something we'd want to put to all the mines? Probably not. This is specific to some specific videos and pictures and concerns that was raised.
So these are things that they're doing. I mean, it was in the last revision, right?
Well, I think they are doing lots of things to control erosion and suppress fugitive dust. I just don't know that we got a good handle on it. And
How they are doing it.
Correct. I mean, we've had emails from the past from 2 years ago about putting ridges up after they had stripped topsoil and doing some things in mulching even on areas where they had stripped topsoil just to control for wind erosion. And those are the kind of practices I don't know that we have a good record of. They may or may not. I don't know. But that's what I envision on these kind of things.
So when you were, and I'm just trying to think back of when everyone had this discussion, you were viewing this as a tool for the staff in order to go and corroborate what is being done.
Correct.
Okay.
So I'm understanding we'll take out the word detailed, and then we'll probably just have to kind of weigh this out here a little bit in the final order, whether we include the condition or not.
I think so.
Okay.
At least this gives a good starting point to try to draft an order in the manner that you guys feel. Of course, you're not held to any of these things as we're going forward, right. Even your opinions as it is. Maybe you'll review the record and feel differently. So. Yeah. But it provides us some good guidance.
I don't think it's going to be extremely burdensome for the mining companies, because I think they pretty much keep track of how many loads a day the water trucks run, and it's just a matter of taking that information and putting it somewhere in the office where somebody else can view it. Mm-hmm.
One of the other things we did talk about is to sit down with the mining companies so we both understand what exactly we mean by this, what we expect. And that hasn't happened, at least not – I haven't been a part of it.
But we can come back and discuss this after we find out how the commission likes to go forward, because they do want to remove the condition, then discussion probably doesn't need to have to happen.
Okay.
Are there any other issues that commissioners at this time would like to discuss? I know there's the impending attorney's fees and plenty of discussion and filings about that. I think it would be best suited to address that after we figure out our issues, but if you want to have a general discussion.
There's no requirement that be dealt with in this same processor and the same time constraints, is there?
No, not to my knowledge. And I'll review that again if you'd like, but I don't see a reason why we need to address it at this point.
I'd rather keep that separate.
I think it's better to be a separate issue from a mine permit. However, I don't want to get to February 9th and then find out that we don't have the option anymore because the clock has ran out.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it may be worthwhile, because I know the voice did bring up the fact that there was not an affidavit of costs, and that is part of what should be provided to the commission as part of their filings and requests for attorney's fees. We could discuss that later on after these issues have been decided by the commission and how what we'd like to request or how we'd like to request it.
Okay.
That's largely a procedural matter.
Okay. Anything else on your end, Mr. Chairman?
No, nothing else.
And you're comfortable with, unless Jack finds out that there's that time constraint on it, with dealing with the request for attorney fees separate from the renewal and revision?
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. Anything else from you, Julie?
No, I'm good. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Yep. Thank you, everyone.